And welcome back to the seventh episode of the Fly Live F1 podcast. I'm joined this week once again by Adrian Keita, Ethan Evans and Kit O'Callaghan, who was again late this week for I think possibly the third time in a row. Just got to call him out there. So this week we're going to do a quick recap of the news because I think it was possibly the busiest week in F1 news this season, and then we're going to go over the race and we've got another quiz at the end. And this time I've been nice and five of the quiz questions are questions about yesterday's race rather than completely random stuff from like random periods in F1 history. The first five questions are from random periods in F1 history though. Right, so the first bit of news we are going to talk about is the fact that Mazepin and Schumacher have been announced as next year's Haas drivers. And Schumacher obviously won the F2 title yesterday. So what I wanted to ask, I'm going to go to Adrian first. Do you think Gunther Steiner will have his hands full with Nikita Mazepin, considering that he got two separate five-second penalties for moving whilst he was defending dangerously in the feature race of the F2 weekend?
Yeah, potentially. We saw Mazepin also move over on Tsunoda in Spa, I believe. So, yeah, it could potentially be a tricky job for Gunther Steiner to keep Mazepin under control. But Mazepin has performed. He's been up there for the whole season for the championship. So, undoubtedly, he has got talent. He has got potential. So, defensively wise, obviously, he is trying to keep the position. But it's not allowed. You simply cannot do that. So yeah, but Schumacher, I'm absolutely pleased that my boy is in F1. It's a very happy ending to the championship season. Obviously Schumacher didn't have the best of sprint races, finishing 18th, but it was enough for him. Callum Ilott finished out of the points, so there was no chance of Ilott moving ahead of Schumacher. But I'm happy that Mick is going into his father's footsteps, and Mazepin and Schumacher as a Haas parent, it could be a dream come true, but it's a dream come true for the parent. So, yeah, it's absolutely great news.
Ethan, do you think that Mick will struggle in his first year, considering that he has taken 2 years to warm up to championships before? You know, it's his second year in F2 that he won, and in F3 as well, it was his second year that he won the championship title in, and he does seem to be a bit of a slow burn, and there's just not time for that in F1. So do you think that will be an issue for him, or do you think that he'll be able to get up to speed quickly?
Well, I think driving that Haas is going to be a difficult job anyway. You know, it's not the quickest of cars, it's towards the back of the grid, and it's going to be a tricky task for any driver, you know. But I think Schumacher will come good eventually. I think obviously he's got the heritage, got the sporting pedigree in his family, and I think he'll come good. I think a little bit more concerned about Mazepin. Obviously he did perform well in F2 this season. I think he came fifth, but you know, Callum Ilott would have been probably a better driver to bring into that seat. But I think it's for commercial reasons that Mazepin has definitely found that seat. But yeah, I think Schumacher shouldn't have any trouble adjusting to F1.
Kit, do you think that Haas have gone with the right choice, going with two rookies over maybe one rookie and a more experienced driver, someone like Perez, who's, you know, currently out of the seat?
I think it's definitely the right choice for the drivers. But it's yet to be seen if it will be the right choice for the team. I think with a team like Haas, they've got very low expectations for the season. You know, they're kind of in a privileged position in the sense that they're not a competitive team when it comes to world championships. So that gives them a bit more freedom with who they can choose. And I think getting the young drivers in, it's cheaper for them, obviously, because these drivers need to prove themselves, so therefore can't be asking the big bucks on the contract. Obviously, Mazepin's bringing in a lot of money through commercial value, and Schumacher, I think, will do exactly the same purely because of his name and the fame that lies behind it. So I think it is the right choice, personally. The driver's going to get a fantastic bunch of experience from driving the Haas, and it's going to ease them into a Formula One environment without them getting thrown in at the deep end with all the media pressure of driving a competitive car that's looking to challenge for world titles and world championships. But Schumacher obviously will be feeling the pressure as is, just because of his name, and the media will be, you know, all over him, seeing if he's going to emulate his father and bring that sort of success to the team. So he's going to have enough pressure as it is. So I think it's a good choice for him to start in a Haas.
Great. So talking of Haas, obviously we had that awful accident last week with Romain Grosjean. Thankfully, he's been discharged from hospital. He's recovering well, but he won't be racing next week in Abu Dhabi. I just wanted to sort of have a chat about how he handled the aftermath of the incident. I think, you know, there were some particularly powerful interviews on Sky this weekend. I don't know if any of you caught it, of him recounting the crash, and, you know, he has sort of an exact memory of all of what happened in all of those 28 seconds. And, you know, he even gave death a name, and like, he's able to recount that so coherently. And I wanted to know if you guys had had any more thoughts since the incident about anything that can be done, particularly the fact that the headrest is something that really hampered him in getting out of the car. Kit was nodding at me when he said he'd seen the interviews. Kit, what did you make of it?
I did see the interviews, yes. Really, really powerful to watch. And I think it was covered in a very, very nice, sort of sentimental and powerful way by the papers that it was in, both in his home country of France and also in the papers just globally around the world. But it was interesting to hear sort of firsthand from Grosjean, and he was saying how he was struggling to get out of the car. The reason for that, you did mention the headrest, and I think the halo, which ended up saving his life, was also part of the problem, but then allowed him to actually pull himself out of the car in the end. So what I'm trying to say is there's probably not a lot they can actually do to prevent that in future, because the halo needs to be there. That saved his life. And the headrest, again, is a crucial piece of equipment. They can look into seeing how they can detach it easier, of course, but I don't think there's really a lot that can be done. And obviously Grosjean was saved by the amazing steps forward that have already been taken, and also by the amazing safety team that was on hand. And that's always going to stay in F1. So I think F1 just is continuing to move in the right direction.
Adrian, have you got anything to build on that from Kit?
No, I think pretty much Kit summed it up really well there. It was powerful to see the interview from Grosjean with Martin Brundle, just to take us through step by step what he saw, what he felt. Obviously, the safety features that have been implemented by F1 over the years have essentially saved his life. So yeah, it's great to see Grosjean taking steps into recovery. It's sad that his F1 career has ended like that. But I think he's, like he said, he's ended his F1 career with a smile on his face. So I think it's great to see that he's recovering well, and hopefully he carries on recovering.
Yeah, and Mercedes have said that if no other teams can give him a test, they will give him a test so that he gets to go back in an F1 car rather than end on the accident. Ethan, have you got anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I think I just echo the thoughts of Adrian and Kit there. It was definitely powerful to see Grosjean step up again and, you know, deliver with that interview. And it was also like a big, big reminder of the dangers that F1 do pose. I do have to disagree with a little bit that Kit said. I think even when drivers finish a race, you can see them sometimes struggling to get out of the car with the headrest. And maybe there's something they can do to make it easier to exit the car, but other than that, you know, fair play to the safety team always being on hand, and, you know, I think they earned their money last weekend.
Absolutely. Now, arguably the biggest piece of news this week was that Lewis Hamilton has COVID. I think it was kind of I was sort of surprised by it, because I think he's been quite clear that he's been perhaps one of the most careful drivers this season. So Lewis having COVID kind of started a game of musical chairs. So George Russell went to Mercedes for the weekend, and Jack Aitken made the step up from F2 into his Williams. And obviously, I don't think we've mentioned it, but Pietro Fittipaldi was in for Roman Grosjean at Haas. Now, we're going to start with Russell's performance. Let's hope Adrian doesn't cry, because he has threatened to, because I think he's still very upset. He's taken his glasses off in preparation for crying. I think everyone was heartbroken for him. He's such a likeable guy. And it just didn't go right for him. But again, he did show some incredible qualities. You know, he lost the win twice. He didn't lose the win just once. He lost the win twice. And that was because he managed to make it back through the field after that awful pit stop drama. I'm going to go to Ethan, because I think he's probably the most able to control his emotions from what the other two look like on this Zoom that we're doing. Ethan, what do you make of Mercedes? What Toto Wolff described as a colossal F-up?
Yeah, well, I think each of us are definitely devastated by what happened to Russell. I think, you know, if there's anyone that deserves it after, you know, applying his craft to the back of the grid for the last 2 years and, you know, outperforming that car and the expectations on him, it's George Russell. I think, you know, in many ways it will be absolutely heartbreaking for him, but in other ways it's, you know, something to build off of. It gives him that experience so that in the future, you know, it's easier, it always gonna be more aware of it. But, you know, Russell, he didn't put a foot wrong all weekend. He topped the first two practice sessions. He was what, a quarter of a hundredth, was it 26 hundredths off pole position. You know, Valtteri Bottas, who has been racing at least for almost 5 years now. But I think, you know, Russell controlled the entire race, and the one weekend that that Mercedes, you know, mess up their entire race strategy is the one weekend, you know, George Russell was leading an F1 race for the first time in his career. But already, I think I've heard a stat from Martin Brundle on, whilst they were racing, that, you know, George Russell was led the third most amount of laps this season. And, you know, he's raced at, you know, Williams for 16 of the 17 races. But I think this will be playing in Toto Wolff's mind for much of the winter break, when it comes to whether he can maybe swap out Russell and Bottas for the 2021 season. But yeah, I think heartbreak for Russell, and it's not great to see.
Yeah, and this has also ignited the debate, you know, is it the car? Could anyone win in that car, as people on Twitter like to say? Kit, do you think anyone can win in that car, or do you think that Russell performing as well as he did just shows how good of a driver he is?
I think it's definitely a bit of both, but you have to consider, if you're going to talk about the car, you have to consider that two drivers that were sure to challenge for that win yesterday were Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc, who obviously both went out on corner two, lap one. So if they had stayed in, especially Verstappen with the pace that he's got, I think it would have been a much more difficult race for Russell. Obviously, extenuating circumstances meant that he only finished down in ninth place in the end anyway. But if Verstappen had stayed in, then I think it would have been very, very different. When it comes to the car, Russell is a brilliant driver, undoubtedly. But the fact that he's been given that car, that drive, certainly helped sort of show his pace and show his ability. So I definitely think it's a bit of both, but I would say more so Russell's speed, and that showed when he overtook Bottas. Although Bottas, you have to say, did have the wrong tyres on. They had to stick the hards back on after the monumental pit stop disasters that went down from the Mercedes garage. So it was certainly a bit of both.
Now, Toto Wolff was quite harsh on Bottas on Sky Germany, from what I've seen reported. Obviously, I can't speak German, so we'll have to take the word for it of Twitter, which maybe isn't the best idea, but it was trustworthy accounts on Twitter. I think he said something about, you know, they asked about Bottas's performance, and he was like, yeah, I know, I'm going to have to talk. I haven't talked to Bottas yet. I'm going to have to talk to him and his team. Bottas has been unlucky this season. He had to have his old hard tyres back on. He's shown that he doesn't overtake. George Russell showed that you can overtake with that car yesterday. George has also said he hoped he'd caused a sort of headache for Toto Wolff. Adrian, do you think it's realistic, given that both Bottas and Russell have already signed contracts for 2021, that those contracts could change?
I really don't know. I really don't know what will happen with the situation between Russell and Bottas. It was complete heartbreak for Mr. Georgie Russell. Obviously, he drove so well. He controlled the race. He missed out on pole by 26 milliseconds. The tyre strategy, they double stacked them. Chaos ensued in the Mercedes garage. They put on the wrong tyres. He charged back, Georgie did. He got puncture, and then that completely dropped him down. So potentially George Russell could go up to Mercedes in the near future. I don't know about 2021. I think it's more or less confirmed that Bottas will stay there and Georgie will stay at Williams, but you never know. They could hold some negotiations and change it some way, but we'll just have to wait and see, and hopefully George does get his chance at Mercedes once more, because he definitely deserves it.
Yeah, I think everyone would agree that Russell deserves another chance at Mercedes. So we had a new winner, and a very unusual podium that none of us would have predicted, I think, going into the weekend. Perez came from last on the first lap after that incident, which we will discuss, to win. And that car was really flying at some point. I mean, he made up the places very quickly. So let's discuss the incident first. Charles Leclerc has been given a 3-place grid job for next week. Kit, what did you make of the incident? Whose fault do you think it is? Pretty devastating for Max, considering that he didn't even get touched and he was out of the race straight away.
Yeah, devastating for Max. He would have been livid with that, I'm sure. Charles Leclerc, my apologies. Charles Leclerc, yeah, he would have been, I think he's accepted the blame for the incident. And I know personally, if I was Max Verstappen, I would have been fuming with it, because obviously he would have been expected to at least podium that race, should he have finished. And definitely he would have thought and felt confident that he could have gone on to win that race, especially considering what happened with the Mercedes and Sergio Perez finishing first, but as you mentioned a minute ago, starting from 18th after that first lap incident. So I would say Charles Leclerc was at fault for that. I know Adrian disagrees, and I'm sure his opinion will be stated later in a couple of minutes. But so personally, I think Charles went too aggressive into that corner, obviously locked up, and then ended up being a bit of a torpedo straight into, I think it was Verstappen that he hit. No, it wasn't Verstappen that he hit, was it? It was Perez, or I can't remember. I have to look at it back, but he definitely went straight into someone, which of course caused the incident. So for me, it was Charles's fault, and he should certainly accept the blame for it.
I think he locked up. He was trying to go down the inside, and then Perez sort of turned in I don't think he was really expecting Charles to go up the inside like he did. But obviously, you know, he locked up and couldn't really control the car. And then Max just took avoiding action and ended up in the wall. Adrian, what's your perspective? Perspective. I thought that wasn't a word then. Perspective on the incident.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Kit thinks that I think differently, but I completely agree with him. It was Charles's fault. He put his hands up. He went. Yeah, it was completely my fault. Perez looked to swoop Rabi outside, and yeah, poor Charles just went into Perez and locked up, and yeah, that was all she wrote. Whilst Max literally smashed into tried to avoid all of the chaos and smashed into the barrier. So yeah, it was Charles's fault. Fair grid drop. I mean, it was his fault that all of this happened. So yeah, Charles's fault. Unfortunately, he was at the race, so was Verstappen, but Perez won, and yeah, deserved a winner in my eyes.
Ethan, what was your perspective on the incident? Because at first I kind of thought, oh, Perez shouldn't have turned in like that. I didn't think it was all Charles's fault. What's your perspective on that, Ethan?
No, as Adrian summarised very briefly, it was Charles's fault. I think, you know, he did admit that it was his fault. I think Verstappen was very angry as well. He thought it was Leclerc's fault. But you can see what he's trying to do. He's trying to go down the inside of Verstappen, just locks his front right tyre up, and, you know, he's basically a passenger at that point. So he just smashes into the back of Perez. Luckily, Perez didn't slip onto the gravel or anything, because then it would have been he would have been out as well. But fortunately, you know, Perez came through to drive yet again an excellent race, and not the first time he's come through the field for a good result, but I think this definitely has to be one of the best races of his career.
Is it the travesty of the season that Perez doesn't have a seat for next year, considering, you know, he's just won a race, he's had a podium this year, he's having a great season, you know, he thinks he's at the peak of his career. Adrian, what do you think of Perez's performance, and do you think he should have a seat next year?
Yeah, he should definitely have a seat in F1, whether it's at Red Bull, whether it's at Racing Point or Aston Martin, as it's going to be called next season. He's been fantastic this season. He's won a race. He's been second once. He's been Mr. Consistent. He's only not finished one race this season. So, yeah, most definitely Racing Point will probably be looking at their perspective and probably going, yeah, we've probably made a mistake here, because Perez is probably at the peak of his powers currently. So yeah, most definitely Perez deserves a seat, but where he will go or whether it be in 2022, we don't know just yet. So hopefully something is confirmed for Perez.
Kit, what's your take on Perez's performance? I mean, he did finish 10 and a half seconds in ahead of Ocon in second place. Can he be ignored by Red Bull? Or, you know, should he be in that second seat?
I think, as you've both said, it would be a travesty should he not be given a seat next year, considering that weekend and the season in full, really. Obviously, we know he's one of the most consistent drivers on the grid. He's shown that from the fact that he's finished in the points at every single race he's managed to finish. Obviously, he has had his unlucky moments this year, with having COVID and, you know, missing races due to that being... And obviously, I think he really showed his mettle by getting his first win in well over 100 races, breaking the record actually now for the longest time without a race win, to finally get his first in F1. So I feel absolutely, you know, ecstatic for him. I think, he clearly had a brilliant drive, and he's really shown the world what he can do, and hopefully one of the teams will realise that and stick him in a car next year.
Ethan, have you got anything to add? Anything to add to that, do you echo what Adrian and Kit have said?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're all in agreement here that Perez is probably one of the best drivers on the grid. He's a phenomenal driver, and the fact he hasn't got a seat confirmed already for next season is a travesty in itself. But surely he has to be getting that Red Bull seat. Albon has been far from convincing. He's only got two podiums for Red Bull, and one of them was because Perez retired. So let's not forget that. But Perez, you know, another phenomenal driver. He's doing everything he can. He's extracting the absolute maximum from that race and point. And, you know, he's likely to finish fourth in the driver's standings this season. So, you know, surely it should be a simple decision for Red Bull, you'd have thought.
Yeah, now another person got not their first win, but their first podium. So Ocon came second. I don't think we've actually talked about him before. So is he finally getting up to speed after his year out? You know, he had that year out where he's sort of reserve driver for Mercedes, and now he's in the Renault. How do we rate him? What do we think of him, Ethan?
You know, I think one of the biggest complaints that Renault have about Ocon is that he often goes absent in races. He falls away, and he doesn't really challenge Ricciardo in the same way that Albon doesn't challenge Verstappen most of the time. But, you know, it should be a nice confidence booster for him. I think it was more luck of the draw than actual good strategy from Renault. I think they got very fortunate with, you know, Mercedes, even like Verstappen and Leclerc. You know, they did get very fortunate with that, in the sense of that. But, you know, he was there he got the podium, and, you know, well done from Ocon.
So Adrian, what are your opinions on Ocon?
I mean, for Ocon, it's been an unlucky season, really. He's not had the best of seasons, like he said through the team radio when he finished the race. It hasn't been a season, but he was there to pounce. He was there to grab a P2, which, I mean, in a sense, he deserved. He was there in the right position at the right time, and he got it. He looked racy through Friday, qualified P11, but as racing, you see the chance, you grab it, you get it, and he got it. So congrats to Ocon for the P2, and yeah, it was a good race for him.
Kit, do you think that Ocon will be able to carry a bit of momentum into next year? And how do you think he'll fare against the return of Fernando Alonso?
No, he won't. Okay. So to expand a little bit, no, I do not rate Ocon that highly, as you could probably tell from what I put in the chat earlier. I think it was a very lucky podium for him. Obviously, all of the cars that crashed out would have finished above him. He's been consistent to give him he's been consistent this season, but not exactly consistently good, consistently poor in his performances, sort of finishing right around, you know, the low end of the points. So I don't think he's been good enough, especially when you look at what Ricciardo can do in that car. The reason we haven't spoken about him is he's just not very noticeable. He's not a great entertaining figure in the car. F1, he's just sort of one of those drivers that he's just there just to fill the numbers. And, you know, for me, you don't really want that in F1. So I'm hoping next year he'll be a bit more improved. But, you know, he can't really do much worse than this year, unless, of course, he has awful luck with reliability, which is the one thing that he has had a good bit of luck with this year.
So from a topic we don't normally talk much about to a topic that we do keep coming back to, which is the midfield battle. Now, Racing Point are back ahead on 134. McLaren have 174 and Renault have 100. And I've written 172 here, but that's definitely not right. Oh, no, maybe it is right. I'm very... What have I written? So, okay, I've written the completely wrong stats. The right stats are Racing Point on 194, McLaren on 184 and Renault on 172. Clearly, I can't read. Do we think, I mean, I personally think it's probably likely to stay in the order. I think that order reflects the sort of ability of those cars and their seasons overall. Adrian, what do you think of the midfield battle with one race left to go?
Well, we look at Abu Dhabi. The Pink Panther had been rapid. Those straight line speeds have been immense. They're probably going to be look for most raciest around Abu Dhabi with just typically their straight line speed. McLaren have been consistent, but they are 10 points behind Racing Point. So it will probably be the Racing Points that will take the third place in the Constructors' Championship. But if McLaren can deliver a consistent weekend next weekend, then we can't count them out. But yeah, it will probably go to Racing Point due to the track layout, but let's not count McLaren out just yet.
Yeah, I mean, McLaren were in front after Racing Point's abysmal performance, which wasn't really their fault, last weekend, and now they're Racing Point are back ahead. So I guess anything can happen. Kit, do you think the order will stay as it is, or do you think there'll be some changes?
I think it will stay as it is, but as you've just mentioned, F1 is an incredibly unpredictable sport. I mean, who could have predicted, first of all, Lewis Hamilton to get COVID and the disastrous weekend for Racing Point last week, obviously made much better by the 1-3 this time around. But as we know, F1 can change all the time, and it can change very quickly. All it takes is a disastrous first lap, a couple of cars to take each other out, and things will be different. So for me personally, it will stay the same. I think that is the most likely of all of the predictions, the outcomes, but that it's no guarantee.
Ethan, what's your assessment of the midfield battle this season, and do you think the order will stay the same?
Well, I think it's been a mixture of Racing Point underperforming and McLaren and Renault overperforming, as you like, because I think Perez, you know, you've got to say, has extracted the maximum out of the car, but there's been room for improvement with Stroll. But interestingly enough, the top five from last night's race all came from the three teams. Lando Norris was the only driver to miss out. I do think it'll be Racing Point, but I'm hoping it'll be McLaren. I'm hoping, you know, Norris and Sainz can pull it out of the bag and claim third position.
So we had two rookies on the grid yesterday. How do we assess their performances? We had Jack Aitken at Williams and Pietro Fittipaldi at Haas. Aitken obviously had the incident at the last corner where he lost his front wing and caused a safety car. Adrian, what do you make of the two rookies' performances?
Well, rookie-wise, Jack finished 16th, Pietro finished 17th, right at the back of the grid. I wasn't expecting much from Pietro and Jack, really. They've obviously just stepped into the cars. They're obviously going to be trying to assess the situation and trying to get used to the car. I reckon Pietro's sole aim was to finish, and he did finish 37 seconds behind the leader. So yeah, it was good in the sense that they got the chance to race in F1 purely just to try out the machinery and what it's like and how they can really delve themselves into the sport. So yeah, I'm happy that those two got the chance to drive in the cars this weekend. Pietro probably might get the chance this weekend at Abu Dhabi as Roman's not racing. But yeah, it was great to see the two rookies, and hopefully they get more chances like this in the near future.
Kit, Pietro will be racing again next weekend in Abu Dhabi, as Grosjean isn't. How much do you think he'll be able to improve building on what he learned this weekend?
Well, I think it's just about, you know, getting that car across the line, not making any major mistakes, crashing out, spins, things like that. He would have learned a lot, of course. It's always a big step up moving from F2 to F1. And you can't, you know, no one really takes to it straight away. Unless you're an absolutely, you know, a wizard of a driver, I might add. So it'll be interesting to see his improvements, whether he can knock off a couple of tenths a second on his lap times. Obviously, well, we know it's a different circuit, of course. But, you know, it'll be nice to see him improving and hopefully, you know, getting a good qualification time and then using that speed, that extra practice, that extra speed in the race on Sunday.
Ethan, I actually thought Jack Aitken did quite well in qualifying. His first few runs were faster than Latifi's runs, and then he was only a tenth off him by the end of qualifying. What do you make of Aitken's performance? You know, he's done a full season in F2, so he's been in single seaters recently, unlike Pietro who hasn't. Do you think that we'll see him in that Williams seat in future?
It's highly possible. You know, I think he definitely performed better than Fittipaldi, although he did not make that mistake in Russell's car, which ultimately led to Russell not winning. But Aitken was definitely the pick of the rookies, I think. But I'll be surprised if Fittipaldi is driving next weekend. I wouldn't be surprised to give the seat to Schumacher or Mazepin to get them adjusted to the new F1 car. But you know, it's all about learning. It's all about the experience for those two. Hopefully we can see them back in F1 in the near future, though.
Right, so predictions for next week. We're going to do this assuming Hamilton is remaining absent, because I think he has to return something like 4 negative COVID tests, and it seems that he does have symptoms as well. So I don't think it's particularly likely that he will be there. So I'll go first, and I did warn you guys before this, unlike Ethan last week, so I'm hoping for some considered predictions. So my quali top three is Bottas, Russell, Verstappen. Then my race top three is Russell, Verstappen, Bottas. And then I've picked Gasly as someone to come through the pack. Kit, what are your predictions?
At this stage, I'm tempted to just be like, Ocon to win something crazy, because it's so unpredictable right now. But I think I'd absolutely, nothing against Hamilton here, but I would love to see Russell have another crack at a podium or potentially a race win. So if I take it on the basis of Lewis Hamilton not being there at the weekend, I want to say Bottas quali one, then Russell, then Verstappen. And in the race, I'm going to go Russell P1. I'm going to go Verstappen 2. And I'm tempted to say, I think Sainz P3. And then if you want to go even further than that, I would go Gasly P4. So let's see how accurate that is.
Who do you think is going to come through the pack?
Tempted to say Giovinazzi, just because we know he's going to be right around the back at the start after his quali. So I think he'll definitely come through the pack a bit, but should finish in the points, I think. But I'm not expecting anything too sublime from him.
Right, let's hope the other two are more prepared. Adrian, what are your predictions?
I had two, as you said, but if we're not going with Hamilton to return, in quality, I've got Russell, Bottas, Verstappen. For the race, I've got George Russell to win, Perez second, Bottas third, and for somebody to make it Through the grid, I fancy Charles Leclerc. I wanted to amend his things that happened this weekend. So hopefully he comes through the grid and, yeah, get some decent points for Ferrari in the last race.
Ethan, what are your predictions?
So for quali, I've got Verstappen to get pole. I think he's been very close to the last few weeks. I'm counting on him to get pole. And then Russell for second yet again, and Bottas in third. And for the race, I've gone for Russell, Verstappen, and I also went for Sainz to come in third. And then my driver to come through the field, I've gone for Sebastian Vettel on his last Ferrari race.
Interesting. I like these predictions. Right, now it is quiz time. I've got 10 quiz questions. Write your answers down. Are you ready? Has everyone got pen and paper? Okay, so question one. What team did Jenson Button win his world title with? Question two. Which team created the six-wheeled F1 car? Question three. How old is the oldest driver to compete in F1? In the whole history of F1. I just thought it was a cool fact. Four. What does the black and white flag mean? We saw a couple people get it yesterday, I think. Alex Albon and Kevin Magnussen, I believe. Question five. In the year that Keke Rosberg won the title, the Drivers' Championship, how many races did he win? And now we have the questions that are related to yesterday's race. So they should be a bit easier for you all. Question six. Until yesterday, when was the last Mexican win? Question seven. How many different drivers have been on the podium this year? Question eight. What was Ocon's tyre strategy? Bonus points for if you know the laps that he changed tyres on. Question nine. How many positions did Norris make up on lap one? Question 10, how long was the circuit yesterday? I'll give it to you in kilometres or miles because I've got both. Does anyone need any other questions repeating?
Repeat question two.
Question two. Which team created the six-wheeled F1 car? Ethan looks very confused. Any other questions need repeating? Are we good? Right, answer time. The team, you can take your mics off mute so we can hear your raw reactions. Question one was, what team did Jenson Button win his world title with? I think this is very easy, okay? I'll be disappointed if people got it wrong. It's Braun GP.
Yes, that's good.
Yeah.
Good.
Tyrrell were the team that created the six-wheeled F1.
Oh, he's definitely not done that. That's give definitely
him,
cheating.
Give him half a point. Look, give him half a point for guessing.
No, he's definitely cheating.
Look, it's there.
He's definitely cheating.
Oh, he's
there. I got mine, to be fair.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so am I. So okay. Have I.
No, you've not, Ethan.
I'm not joking.
Okay. Settle down. Question three, the oldest driver to compete in F1. I did actually mean to give you multiple choice for this one, but oh well. The oldest
driver... 56.
Oh, it's 55.
Oh, are you joking? Yeah. Oh, no.
Wait, you wanted the age? I thought you wanted the driver.
No, the age of the oldest driver.
Hey, no, specify. Who was it? Who is it by it?
I don't know. I haven't written that down.
Oh, it's corrupt. It's game over. It's a disgrace.
No, I'm not having this. Okay. I'm not having this. What?
It's on Wikipedia, to be fair. I remember reading through it. You can look at...
down.
I wrote Fangio down. So you weren't
there quite long. Really not. Some random person from Monaco competed in like one Grand Prix or something.
It wasn't. It definitely wasn't Fangio because I was looking at this on the F1 Wikipedia like 3 weeks ago.
Right. The black and white flag. What does the black and white flag mean? Does anyone
track
know?
Track limits.
No.
Oh,
it's like it. It's like F1's version of the yellow card. So it technically it gets for unsportsmanlike behaviour, but anything like final warning, yellow card, unsportsmanlike behaviour, I will give you.
Should have known that for my go-karting.
Honestly. Keke Rosberg won one race in the year that he won the title.
Oh, it was one!
I put two.
I felt like these weren't that bad. Okay. The last Mexican to win a Grand Prix before yesterday was in 1970. So,
I thought it was a trick question.
First and
fifth. Pedro Rodriguez.
Uh-huh. There has been 13 different drivers on the podium this year.
Get in there.
I'm getting so close with all of these, I swear.
Ocon started on the mediums and then went to the hards. He pitted on lap 42. Oh. One stop.
Good guess from me there. Not even going to lie. That was just a straight guess.
Norris made up 9 positions on lap one. Oh. He went from P19 to P10. And the outer track is 3.5 kilometres or 2.2 miles.
Yes.
Oh. All right, scores on the doors. What are they?
Who you want them first?
Adrian, what did you get out of 10?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Ethan?
I also got 6.
Okay. Oh!
I thought I was doing well. I only got 5.
Oh, we've got a tie.
Are we having a tiebreaker?
Yeah, I feel like we need a
tiebreaker. Let Ethan win. I'm a bottle.
Oh, yes, I'll take it. I'll take it.
There we are. Adrian has... We've broken Adrian's winning.
By 1 year, I missed out on that. 56 instead of 54.
Same results. Right. That is all we have time for. We will be back next week with another episode hosted by Ethan after the final race of the Grand Prix. Kit's pointing at himself. Kit, I'm not letting you host this.
Oh, please, just once. Please.
No, it'll try to take over halfway through again.
Maybe we'll do a one-off in the off-season where Kit can host, but...
Special.
Oh, only a one-off.
Christmas special. Yes. New Year special.
Kit can host a Christmas or New Year special. I've said it on the podcast, it can happen. Right, that is all we have time for. Thank you, Kit, Adrian and Ethan for joining me. I've been Izzy Harmon and you've been listening to the F1 podcast on Fly Live.